Please ask. Perfect. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask questions about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please join me to welcoming Stephanie L., a compulsive overeater from California.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Happy Sunday. I am Stephanie L., and I am a very grateful and recovered one day at a time compulsive overeater. And I forgot to ask, is it possible to co-host me? I do have some pictures. Is showing pictures okay? Or okay, if someone could co-host me, then I can show some pictures. I also want to thank Jessica for inviting me to your meeting today. And then I wanted to welcome all the newcomers. I heard Kim, Hava, Bonnie, and Arena. And whether you're brand spanking new or just coming back, I just want to say this program works. Miracles happen here. And I just hope that you keep coming back. And let me see if I'm co-hosted. Okay, so I am just going to share my screen here. As I tell the first part of my story. So I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for about 17 years. And I wish I could say I've been here for 17 years and I've been abstaining for 17 years. And that's just not my story. I have had long periods of recovery, and then I have also had long periods of relapse. I am currently about 2 years and 2 months, by the grace of God. I call my higher power God, so I hope that doesn't offend anyone. But by the grace of God, I have been abstaining for 2 years and 2 months, coming out of a relapse that I thought that I was going to die. In fact, I had just resigned myself to the fact that this is my life. And so I just wanted to just show a couple pictures. So as I said, I've had long periods of recovery, and here's a picture of that. At this point, I had about 3 years. I'm holding my grandson. I'm at a healthy body weight. It was my first day. I switched careers. I decided to make a career change and went back to school. And it was my first day going back to school. I'm representing, he's representing, everything is great. And let me tell you, this person in this picture, little did I know or anticipate that in a short 4 months, I would be back in the food. If you would have told me that day, I would have been like, there's no way I'll be back in the food. And unfortunately, the day I graduated with my bachelor's degree, because I had never gone to college, so I had to start at the beginning. And so here I was, 110 pounds heavier, same grandson, you can see him there, right? Same little cutie pie. And let me, it's kind of big. There we go. Sorry. I don't have many pictures of myself at my top weight is 250 pounds. I don't have many pictures of myself at that weight. But this was a day that I was thrilled that, you know, I had graduated and I allowed them to take this picture. And then I want to give some hope, right? This is in January, lost the 110 pounds that I gained. I'm here with my sponsor, some of my sisters in sobriety at the OA birthday party. And one more picture I'll show. And these are my two, I've walked this path with these two women for the last 8 years. We have supported each other through recovery, through relapse. And we wanted to celebrate that by getting tattoos. And so the Thursday before the birthday party, we went and we got tattoos together. My first only, we'll never do it again, but there you go. So I wanted to show that picture and just show, you know, there is hope. And here's the thing. The one thing that I have done perfectly since I walked into this program is I never leave. I don't leave. So even in that, those 2 years of relapse, you know, I was still going to meetings, not the way I go to meetings today. I knew I was still trying to get a sponsor. I was still, you know, I knew and I have known that there is no hope for me outside of this program. Okay, there is no hope. And so going back to that first picture I showed you, you know, my first day, I had finished my general ed classes. I was transferring to a four-year university. So happy, so blessed. And life was getting busy, right? Life was getting busy. And I wasn't doing the things that I need to do to stay connected to power. I wasn't, if a sponsee relapsed or didn't call, I was happy because I didn't have to deal with it, right? And it's interesting because I couldn't see, it's kind of like a dimmer switch. It was going down, like it was getting darker and darker slowly and slowly, and I couldn't see it. I wasn't doing 10 steps. I wasn't doing all of the things that keep me connected with this amazing power. And on January 1st, somehow it seemed like a good idea to pick up. And I never imagined that that first bite was going to turn into 2 years of hell. And I know we have newcomers here. So if I rewind all the way back, I have had a problem with compulsive overeating my entire life. Okay. I used to think that it was everyone else's fault that I was eating. I would eat at my, I have three daughters and I ate at my kids. I ate at my ex-husband. I ate at, you know, you looked at me the wrong way and it was a good idea to eat. And it was the only thing that, it was my only coping mechanism. At least I thought it was my coping mechanism. I work hard all day and I would come home and, I deserved it. These are the things I told myself. I deserve to just sit down and watch TV and relax and eat whatever I want. And the crazy thing is what I thought was the solution was perpetuating the problem, right? I deserve this. And I have to say every bite that I took got me to where I am today. I didn't know that I had a disease. I didn't know I had an illness. I didn't know that I had a progressive illness. And even when I got to OA and I heard people talking about this, I still didn't get it. And, you know, I do want to say also, I want to give credit where credit is due, my higher power, this amazing power that is saving my life is the hero of my story. I can't take any credit for this. The only thing I can take credit for is showing up and somehow being willing to do whatever my sponsor told me to stop the pain, because, you know, in that relapse, I was at the end of it, I was eating against my will. And I don't know if anyone can relate with that, but, you know, it talks about in the doctor's opinion, and it's one of my favorite simple depictions of what it's like to be in this disease on page XXIII on the bottom. It says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Well, And then it says the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. And my compulsive overeating life was my reality. I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. And I ate because it was, again, it was my only solution to life. You know, like I said, I thought I ate because of people. I didn't eat because of people. I eat because I'm a compulsive overeater. You know, there is no person, place, thing, event that is the cause of me being a compulsive overeater. I don't know why I'm this way, but I know I was born this way, right? And it's like that step one that somehow along the way, before I relapsed, I stopped thinking I was a compulsive overeater. I don't know what it was. And for me, I have to, not intellectually, because I could quote the big book while I'm shoving food in my mouth, right? So self-knowledge avails me nothing, right? There's no transformation in knowledge, right? I have to know how to work these steps to connect with power, but that's not the solution. So at some point, you know, that first half of step one, truly believing in my heart of hearts that I am powerless over food, somehow I stopped believing that, or I wouldn't have taken that first bite. You know, and I often hear people say, well, I think, you know, their relapse was a step three issue. You know, I'm not turning my will and my life over. And for me, I'm not going to turn my will and my life over to anything if I don't believe I need to, if I don't truly believe I'm powerless. Like, I have to be drugged through the mud, you know. And then in this paragraph, it says, you know, they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And so here is my cycle, right? I don't know if anyone can relate with this. I would wake up. I'm going to get this sponsor. I'm going to go to this meeting. I'm going to do this food plan. Okay, it's going to be different today. I can do this today, right? I'd get through half the day. I'd become irritable, restless, because I didn't have power to stop. And I'd eat again. And then it was like, you know, this, like, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, I don't know, the cycle of doom, I guess, right? So I pick up again. And after 5 minutes, I'd be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what did I do? What am I doing? What am I doing? And I don't just eat. Like, I'm like, like, I am shoving it in my mouth, right? And I'm not getting the same effect. What did I do? I binging on Netflix, right? Escaping into some fantasy world, binging on Netflix, watch, you know, eating. I've got all my binge foods around me. I've got chocolate stains all over my shirt. Fall asleep, wake up, start eating again. Finally go to bed around 3 a.m. and go to bed and go, okay, it's going to be different. I can't do this to myself anymore. This is it. This is the last time. And I don't know, like, the pillow fairy is going to, you know, strike me absent in the middle of the night. It doesn't work that way. I wish it worked that way. And then I'd wake up and feel physically ill. My mouth was really dry from all the salt and the crap. Calculating the calories I ate, wondering, afraid, are any of my clothes going to fit me? You know, because there's that insanity too, you know, because I gained that 110 pounds probably in like 3 or 4 months, you know, so not having clothes that fit, just bulging out of everything. So swollen, like I would look in the mirror from here up because I couldn't bear to look from here down. I hated myself. So I'd wake up afraid to get out of bed, afraid to put clothes on, afraid of what was going to happen through the day. and again say to myself, I'm going to go to this meeting, I'm going to get this sponsor, I'm going to call this person, I'm going to try this food plan, right? And it was just like this cycle over and over again. And it says in that same paragraph, after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of the spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And this is repeated over and over, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of recovery. And that entire psychic change that the doctor's talking about is that spiritual awakening that this program promises. And here's the funny thing, right? I was that person that would be at a meeting and go, this big book is saving my life, right? These steps are saving my life. And here's what I didn't understand. I didn't get. This book gives me the 12 steps. It tells me how to work these steps so that I can connect with a power greater than myself, who will restore me to sanity, who will lift this merciless obsession from me. Because that person who can't get out of that, me, when I say that person, in this cycle over and over and over again, right? Eating against my will, so depressed, like, you know, my husband, and it's funny because my husband's one of us too, and he was in relapse at the time too. And he reminded me, like, about, I don't know, 6 months ago, he's like, do you remember when you used to come to bed and ask me for the gun? Like, I would go to bed and say, where's the gun? Where's, you know, in a safe, hidden, right? Like, he's not going to let me, because I did not want to live. I couldn't stop. I was like the walking dead. And how do I go from that wreck, that hopeless wreck, to someone with whom the problem has been removed? And that's what happened. And I'll tell you what happened. Like, the OA birthday party here in California happens every year. I go to that OA birthday party no matter what. I've been going for, like, I don't know, 14, 15 years. And I'm in that relapse. It's about the 2-year mark. I wake up, I see on Facebook the birthday party's going on. And I don't know, this little voice who now I know was my higher power, you know, like my sponsor talks about, like, God putting out these search and rescue missions for these compulsive overeaters like me, right? And that little voice was the beginning of that search and rescue mission. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I log on, camera off, right? I pay for it in that moment, right? Because I had to pay it to, and it was on Zoom, right? This is in the middle of COVID. And I log on, camera off, binging, but, you know, like, crumbs all over my laptop, right? But I'm here. And I hear this woman who became my sponsor, who did this talk on the pitfalls that lead to relapse. And she said, and this is what caught my attention, like, she said, you can have all the desire in the world and not the needed power. And maybe I heard that before. I don't know. I probably did, but I heard her. Her face was bright. She had lipstick on, her eyes were sparkling, right? She had like 30 plus years. She told parts of my story. And she said, you can have all the desire in the world. And here's the thing. I could barely walk down the street. I could barely do basic hygiene, because not only did I gain 110 pounds, but I was working from home. I was working on Zoom, right? With the camera like this, so no one could see my body. And I wasn't moving. I could barely walk down the street. I could barely take care of, you know, basic hygiene. I had no clothes that fit me. And I would have, like, sponsors that would tell me, you just don't want this bad enough. And I wanted this, but I couldn't solve the problem, right? I had the desire, but I didn't have the power. And literally, and I am not even exaggerating, what was in my mouth kind of dropped out. I just kind of sat there, eyes glazed over, and just stared at her. and I heard her. And I got her number and I called her, and she agreed to work with me. And we worked the steps like in 8 weeks, which, you know, if you read Bill's story, Ebby came and started sponsoring Bill, and Ebby only had 2 months, right? It doesn't say it should take a year to work the steps. It doesn't say it should take 6 months to work the steps. It says, you know, like, I was dying and I needed to move thoroughly but quickly to get to that spiritual awakening. And I remember she said to me, you know, once we get to step two, you're going to start feeling the power flow in. And I'm like, okay, but what do I do today? How do I get through the day? Because you see, I hadn't gotten a day of abstinence in months. And I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work for me, because I stopped believing. I started to think that part of me was like, yeah, the steps work for you, but you're not as bad as me. You don't have it like I have it. Or the lies I would tell myself would be, you know, I've exhausted all of my recoveries. There's no recoveries left for me. And I said, I don't know if I can get through the day. I don't know if this is going to work. And she said to me with that same on Zoom, that big smile, she said, do you believe it's working for me? And I said, yeah. And she's like, hold on to that. Oh, and I want you to call these women who have worked the steps, and you're going to pray. And when you get up tomorrow morning, you're going to spend 30 minutes. First thing in the morning, you're going to spend 30 minutes in prayer and meditation. And I was like, and I'm a really good soldier, so of course I wasn't going to say no to her, but I'm like, oh, okay. But I was like, you know, I had a higher power before, but I was pissed off because I blamed God for that relapse. I blamed God for taking this away from me. And now I look back on it and like, that God didn't take anything away from me. That higher power, I turned away. I stopped. It's like a relationship, like any relationship. Like if I don't spend time with my husband, if I don't, like we do a date night every week. We talk every day on the phone during lunch. We went for a hike today. If I don't spend time with my husband, that relationship is going to suffer. I'm not gonna be close to my husband. I'm not gonna have a marriage. Or if I don't spend time with my children, they're not children anymore, they're a grown adult woman. But if I don't spend time with my daughters, that relationship is gonna suffer. So God didn't take anything away from me. I turned away. And so I will never forget that pain of that first week, the detox, I couldn't sleep at night because I had binged myself to sleep every night, that I think my body was like, I couldn't go to sleep. And I remember laying there going, God, I don't know. I'm pissed off at you. And I don't even know if you're here. And I don't know if you exist. And I don't know, but I don't want to die. I really don't want to die. So I failed to mention, I also had some health issues popping up. You know, carrying that much weight at, you know, in my mid 50s was very different than carrying that much weight in my 20s or my 30s or even in my 40s. I you know, was having heart palpitations. I had to have a hysterectomy during that time. I was not physically healthy. I wasn't physically, emotionally, and I was spiritually bankrupt. That's the truth. So I just held on. I held on because I didn't want to die. And that next morning, I made it through that night. And that next morning, I set my timer, because she said, you're going to get up, go to the bathroom, set your timer for 30 minutes. You can do a spiritual reading. You can do a meditation, but I want you to start spending time with God. And I set my timer and I sat there and I had the same conversation. God, I don't know if you're here. I don't know if you, I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't want to die. And I'm very visual. And I had this visual, I like I visualize this park bench and God's over here on the one end of the park bench and I'm over here and I'm looking down and I'm like, I can't even look at you. I'm pissed off at you. I don't know why you did this to me. You've made my life hell. And I spent that 30 minutes and I was honest, right? Like I'm having a real conversation with this amazing source of power. But I didn't feel it that day. And I remember doing an outreach call and because I was calling, she gave me a list of numbers calling. I'm calling people, go, what do you do during this 30 minutes of prayer and meditation? And she made a couple suggestions. The first one was two-way prayer, which saved my butt also, because not only was I talking to this power, but I got to hear what the power, you know, I got to like have a dialogue. And she said, wow, like, what if every day you just picture yourself getting a little bit closer on that park bench? What if every day, you know, you just visualize getting closer? And I'm like, okay. And I did that. And every day, and it was funny, like by the end of the week, I wasn't so pissed off anymore. And I was starting to see that, you know, my brain was clearing, that food haze was clearing up. And I'm doing whatever my sponsor's telling me to do. I'm doing all this step one work and we're about ready to start working on step two. And I started to feel the power and the obsession was lifted. It was lifted after like the first week and a half, the obsession was gone again. And how does that happen? Because for 2 years, I couldn't stop eating. How does that happen? And it happens through these steps. And, you know, and I'll go back to step one again. So if I don't believe I'm powerless, why would I even be here today? Right? I have a lot. I mean, if I can stop eating compulsively and live free of this merciless obsession on my own, if I was a normie, if I was like my daughters who don't need to do this and they can really eat whatever they want, it's not a big deal. If I could do that, why would I be here? I wouldn't need to be here. So that powerlessness, being drugged through the mud by this disease, the progression of this disease, the hopelessness, the darkness, like all of that brings me to a place of accepting my powerlessness. And then the unmanageability, the second half of step one, seeing whether I'm in the food or out of the food, how unmanageable my life is, how it's like the bedevilments, you know, like living those bedevilments. And if my book doesn't open to it, then I'm not going to waste your time going there. But let's see, where are you? Oh, here we go. Okay. Okay. It was right there. There we go. You know, on page 52, it says we were having trouble with personal relationships. Well, I had no marriage. In fact, my marriage with my husband and I had to separate for a period of time because not only was I sick, but he was in relapse too. And we had to like separate so he could work on, you know, his program, I could work my program. And, you know, the miracle is that, you know, our marriage is better today than it has ever been in the 15 years that we have been together. But having trouble with personal relationships, we couldn't control our emotional nature. You know, someone would look at me the wrong way and I would start crying or I'd get angry, you know, prey to misery and depression. I lived with this suicidal ideation every single day, wishing my life would just be over and resigning myself to the fact that my life, that I was going to die. We couldn't make a living. I work in a treatment center. And this is really funny because I work with adolescents. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. And I'd show up for, you know, work and I'd talk to them about recovery. And I would talk to them about surrender, you know, da 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 da. And then I would leave the session and I'd go binge in my office with the door shut. Had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear. I was always looking over my back. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I was a walking bedevilment. And that's the unmanageability part of, you know, of step one. And then if I'm truly in my heart of hearts, believe the powerlessness and the unmanageability, you know, then step two makes sense. Come to believe that there's something, anything, something bigger than me that might, just maybe, restore me to sanity.
1 minute.
5 minutes left or?
Just one.
Oh, one. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So with 1 minute left, no, I'm not going to read anymore. I just want to tell you about my life today. I am graduating grad school in 7 weeks. And I have been present for 2 years of that of graduate school, where I'm going to become a therapist working with children and adolescents. My husband and I went on a long, strenuous hike today because my body is healthy. I have friendships and people in my life, and I have women I sponsor that I get to witness the God's miracle in their lives, and I get to be a small, tiny, tiny part of it. And I get to be here with all of you before dinner on a Sunday, and it's a beautiful life. And I am so grateful. So thank you for letting me share, and I will pass.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.